it's Flo, and this is my impression of me arguing with an old-timey Southern lawyer in a courtroom. Objection! You can't show my clients' rates to your customers! We compare our Progressive Direct rate and our competitors' rates in one place, so shopping is easier. Only showing your rate when it's lowest! Slander in the court of law! No, we show our rate even when Progressive isn't the lowest. I rest my case! Move to adjourn for snack time!
Compare rates and save at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations.
This is Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale on Equestrian Legacy Radio. Heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net.
I am so glad our trails have crossed. Oh, the joy you bring to me. And as I look upon each face, such kindness there I see. I wish for you the love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Our trails now go their separate ways, and life goes rolling on. I hope our trails will cross again before God takes us home. Share the wondrous love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Yes, as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed.
Welcome to Blessed Trails. I am your host, Belinda Gale, and our show features interviews with wonderful guests, as well as gospel and patriotic music and songs that just plain lift your heart, most all of them with a definite Western flair. Today's guest is a musician's musician, and while his abilities cross many musical genres, bluegrass and Western are what I know him best for. So let's kick off the show with one of his bluegrass pieces, Blue Range.
She traveled out west with her brother and his wife. She left the blue of Kentucky to start a new life. She had nothing packed but her fiddle and her bow, built on the Irish soil so long, long ago. Oh, the wagon moved slowly as she walked close behind. She played as she marched while the oxen kept time. She searched through the silence, though it seemed so very strange. Those sweet melodies waiting out on the range. In the lovely light of the moon, soon after the campfire died, she played a fiddle tune. She searched through the silence, though it seemed so very strange. Love's sweet melody waiting out on the range. For gold. With his horse and his guitar, he sang, I'm told. But he came out for money or to settle the claim. Got a job punching cattle way out on. and he strummed while he rode through the night. His voice calmed the kettle before morning light. He searched through the silence, though it seemed so very strange. Love's sweet melodies waiting down on blue rain. In the lovely light of the moon, soon after the campfire died, played a fiddle tune. He searched through the silence, though it seemed so very strange. Love's sweet melodies waiting down on blue rain. Left the blue of Kentucky to start a new life. She searched through the silence, though it seemed so very strange. Love's sweet melodies waiting down on blue rain. Love's sweet melodies brought them home on blue rain.
Bluegrass sound. That was awesome. The first time I met today's guest was at a Western Music Association convention, and I was in a room for a showcase, and I watched him quietly walk into the showcase with a mandolin tucked under his arm, and I was immediately struck with his quiet, serene demeanor and really great smile. He's not a large man, and you couldn't help noticing his very, very thick glasses. And as he headed for the stage, I'm a bit embarrassed to admit, I thought, oh, how sweet, the group and stage is going to let him sit in with them. What happened next literally made my jaw drop. I'm surprised there wasn't smoke coming out of that mandolin. He was playing it so hot and seemingly so effortlessly. I quickly realized that they were the ones being honored and blessed by having him on stage with them. Over the weekend, I saw him do the very same thing with the guitar and the banjo. But the really beautiful thing about this man is that over the course of that same weekend, I saw him back up not only the stars and rising stars of our genre, but the newbies just trying to figure it out, and our precious youth performers as well. In pretty short order, I came to understand that this man's immense musical talent is surpassed only by his huge and giving heart. And I have since had the distinct pleasure of sharing the stage with him myself, and I cannot tell you how delighted I am to welcome to the show musician, singer-songwriter, producer, teacher, and a heck of a nice guy, Ernie Martinez. Welcome, Ernie.
Well, thank you, Belinda. Wow, boy, my face is turning red from all that.
Oh,
oh my, yeah.
Oh, you're
well, gorgeous. It sure is an honor and a pleasure to be part of what a wonderful show you have here, and you know, and to meet Gary and. Just to hang out with all you folks for this, you know, this hour that we're doing this. So
it's going to be fun.
I feel blessed. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun getting to know you better as well. And before we kind of get into your, we were going to talk about your childhood and you know, kind of your upbringing. But before we get into that, you have a kind of a fun story about the song we just heard. Do you want to tell us about Blue Range?
Yes, actually, it's a it's the title cut of my. With my most recent CD, my second CD, Blue Range, which is designed to be about, you know, the two first musical genres that I love the most, bluegrass and western, or cowboy, as we know it. And it was fun, you know, putting that whole project together. And with the song Blue Range, was actually the last cut to go on the record, only because of the fact that it wasn't written yet. You know, the title was there, everything was there. And my co-writer, Ann Byrne, who lives down in the Phoenix area, she had sent me oh, probably about 6 pages of words. And I'm thinking, oh my, this is going to be a little tough. Okay, I'm going to wait till towards the end of the project to get this done. Well, as time went by super fast, my engineer had told me, given me a deadline, said, you know, we're almost to the end of this. We need to have this thing written in 12 hours. And I told him, okay, because, you know, that's all I could do. So I went home planning on staying up all night long. And this all started about 8 o'clock, you know, in the evening. And I said, okay, how am I going to do this? I'm going to just spread all these sheets of paper out and look this over and condense as much as I can. Well, I guess, you know, the good Lord really took over and said, do this, do this, do this, do this. And there's your song. And lo and behold, in a matter of 2 hours, I had it done.
Wow.
And so I was in bed before midnight and planning on staying up the whole, until I had to, you know, and, boy, it just, you know, the pressure was on and it was all good pressure. I had so much fun condensing that and everything just fell into place. And as a result, it ended up being one of the strongest cuts on the record. So I'm real happy about that.
Yeah. That's what happens when the Lord steps in, doesn't it?
Well, yes, indeed, you know.
Every time. Oh, gosh. So, Ernie, let's talk about your childhood. Where were you raised, and what did that look like?
Well, I am a Denver native, you know, born and raised in the Denver area. And, that was not too long after my folks had moved here from California, from the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
And,
okay.
And my mom was not feeling very good at that time, and asthmatic and things like that. So she needed, you know, a different climate. And so right after, I guess a few months after they moved to Denver, then I was born, and been here ever since. Except for about 6 months, I moved down to the Dallas Fort Worth area for about that long, and then came back. But then, you know, that's a whole other story there too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, I'm one of six, and I'm right in the middle. And there's 7 years between my older three sisters, and then 7 years between my younger sister and brother.
Wow.
And
you're
just kind of in the middle. I'm just kind of in the middle there, and. They're all musical, you know, in some ways, but they didn't have the dedication, you know, that that I did. But they, you know, they definitely achieved goals in other areas, which I envy them dearly for, you know. And I wish I could play golf as good as they do, but I do play it and I love the game. And you know, we'll talk about that too at some point. But raised up in a Catholic upbringing.
Because your family's Hispanic, both your mom and your dad are Hispanic.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Yes. Mm-hmm. My father was born in the San Luis Valley in Alamosa, Colorado. Mm-hmm. Born and raised mm-hmm. there, and my mother was born in a town called Hudson, Colorado, which is a little bit north of the Denver area, and then was raised down in the Trinidad, Colorado area,
okay.
And so they, you know, they were both from Southern Colorado, both sides of I-25.
Wow.
So, wow. And then they met in, in the, I want to say the Estes Park area.
Okay.
I'm sure my mom will correct me if I'm wrong, but,
which she has
many times during my upbringing and I thank her for it, you know.
that's what mom's
doing. Yeah.
And then both of And so you grew up with a very rich Spanish heritage and Spanish being spoken in your home, correct?
Yeah, I did. Because my dad, he played guitar, piano, and accordion, and he comes from a musical family, and a lot of his relatives played some instrument, you know, whether it be guitar, piano, accordion, fiddle. It didn't matter. Mm-hmm. You know, they always had music growing up, and it, it rubbed off on my dad, obviously. And then he, when they bought me a ukulele to start playing music with, they I guess they figured out that whenever TV commercials would come on that had music, I would, if I was, you know, in bed, you know, I would get up and go dance in front of the TV. And so they saw that I, you know, had some rhythm, and they think, oh, he might just be musical of some sort. So, so they got me a ukulele probably, you know, about a year or two later. Well, no, I guess sooner than that, because I was 4 years old when I got it. And
wow.
My dad had showed me, things that he knew, because, you know, all to me that ukulele was a small guitar. I had no idea what that instrument was about or where it came from or, you know, the whole origin behind it. And to me, it was just a guitar that I could hold because I couldn't hold his. You know, I'd have to get inside of it to, you know, to make any music out of it. You know, that's what I did. I played the ukulele and played whatever melodies, whether it be big band or Beatles songs or, you know, and just anything that he knew, Spanish songs. And while I was still speaking Spanish at that time, that's the only language I knew before I learned English. And I learned it really fast, you know, because I needed to. That was all it was going on. This was way before all the, you know, the bilingual things started happening. And so we really, you know, people my age at that time, including my siblings, you know, my older ones and all that, we just didn't have to know it. And, but I'm glad I did. And then after I, you know, when the English came in, then a lot of it went away, but I kept a lot of it up by singing, you know, El Rancho Grande, is very pivotal, probably the most pivotal, Spanish song that I ever learned in my life, because that one really stuck with me. And, I didn't really know what it was about. I figured it had, you know, something about a ranch in there. I just, you know, and I didn't care because I just wanted to play music and,
yes,
you know, sing and all that. And the only resentment that I had, and it was very small, is that, you know, whenever we'd have company, you know, I'd have to get up and, you know, little Ernie would have to get up and sing in front of everybody. And, you know, I wanted to go out there and play with the kids, you know, with all my cousins and, you know, all my relatives.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want to do that, but, you know, it took some talking, you know, me into it. And then I said, all right. So once I got into it, then, you know, I kept going for a while. And I, you know, once I get into it, then it's,
yeah,
you know, it, yeah. Then I forget about all the other stuff, and I figure, okay, I'll go do this later. So
I'll go do that later.
Yeah.
Let's listen to Rancho Grande, because you have a great version of it. So let's listen to that right now.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Yeah, I wanted to try to form that into a bluegrass.
Rancho Grande, y ahí ando me diría, qué linda rancherita, qué alegre me decía, qué alegre me decía. Te voy a hacer tus calzones, como los que usa el ranchero, y los comienzo de lana, y los acabo de cuero. Y ahí ando Rancho Grande, y ahí ando me diría, qué linda rancherita, qué alegre me decía, qué alegre me decía. Te voy a hacer tus camisas, como los que usa el ranchero, y los comienzo de lana, y los acabo de cuero. Rancho Grande, y ahí ando me diría, qué linda rancherita, qué alegre me decía, qué alegre me decía. Te voy a hacer tus calzones, como los que rancheros y los comienzos de lana y los acabo de cuero.
I'm smiling so big right now. All the instruments on that cut?
Yeah, I did everything on that. That's one of the songs that I actually did everything on it. And I heard it a certain way, and I needed to, you know, just I felt blessed that I could do everything on it. So
that's great.
It came out, you know, very bluegrassy and very cowboy, you know, the way I want it, you know, about the farmers and ranchers south of the border, you know, and and it was extremely fun, you know, to put that one together.
Very, very fun. And, you could feel it. And your accent is flawless through the song. That's beautiful. You can tell that that's your heritage. That's just wonderful. Well, what you mentioned in the intro was the fact that you have to wear very highly corrective glasses. Can you tell us about your vision challenges and where, you know, when that started?
Oh, sure.
And what's the story around that?
Oh yes, I was born with cataracts, and about 6 months after I was born, they were able to do surgery and start removing them. They did one eye at 6 months, and then the other one at a year and a half, I think, is how that worked, and was good and bad. And the only reason I say bad is because had I been able to hang on to that, I could have got all the, the LASIK, you know, that came out years later. You know, and really had that even more so corrected. But on the good side of it, they were able to correct it. I mean, as much as they can, they were able to remove the cataracts and give me enough sight that I can, do what I need. I can run and play and ride my bike and play golf and do whatever I want. You know, I just didn't have enough to read the second line in the driver.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, that, yeah. That's the only thing I couldn't do was get, no, I mean, I physically I can. But
your vision,
because at age 19, I did the daredevil teenager thing, and I rode a motorcycle for 2 years and never had a problem. But I was always feeling like, well, I know I'm not having a problem now, but I may at some point. So I better just realize I had my fun with it and I got rid of it. And, because I was kind of rebelling against the fact that I wanted to drive so bad, you know, at the age of 16, and I was kind of disappointed, but I was prepared at the same time that I bought myself a very expensive bicycle, you know, during that time, you know, knowing that if this doesn't happen, at least I have a really cool vehicle, you know, without a motor that I can ride. And so I was, you know, I was ready to handle the, you know, disappointment when that happened. And, but at age 19, you know, I traded a mandolin for a motorcycle that I had to put a lot of money into to get it going. And, but I drove it for 2 years, you know, on the streets and never had a problem, never got stopped. And, but I thought, well, one of these days my luck's going to run out and something's going to happen. So, and I have, you know, driven cars, automatic and stick. So I know how to do all that. And I had fun doing that, but and then you kind of wise up a little bit and realize, okay, at least you have the know-how to do it, but it's just do it when you have to, you know, if there's an emergency or something like that. And and knock on wood, there hasn't been an emergency. So I've never, and once in a while, you know, I'll, we'll go out to a field and somebody will, you know, let me get behind the wheel for a bit and just to keep the chops up just in case. So, and that's fine. That's good enough, you know. But I did have I had a moped after that, and, you know, which was something you can drive depending on the power of the engine, which is something you can drive without a license. And that started giving me problems. So I got rid of that and got a scooter, which was an upgrade of that. And that's what I got in trouble on. It's just this little thing that looks like a moped. And yeah, and it was just kind of funny how that all happened. But and I said, okay, I'm done doing all that. So, but then 3 years ago, I'm just kind of speeding the time machine up here. But 3 years ago, in 2011, actually, I got diagnosed with glaucoma, which is something, you know, that was handed down. Both my parents have it. My dad had it, you know, before he died, and my mom, you know, still has it, and it's affecting her now a little bit. But although there's not a cure for it, but there's treatment, and they gave me the treatment for it, and they also said that we can do a surgery that will lessen the pressures and it will help your vision. Mm-hmm. And they asked me if I want to go for it, and I said, sure. Well, what is it? And they said lens implants. And I said, great, because that will thin the thick lenses down immensely, which it did.
Wow.
It got all that weight that I've been wearing for, you know, years and years and years, that gave me the relief in that department. And the surgeries were, you know, successfully done and, you know, outpatient. And so it's been 3 years since I've had that, and it's given me more peripheral vision. And right now we're still tweaking the magnification on the outer, you know, lenses. Mm-hmm. So they were able to go in through the iris and do that. And I was, you know, coherent the whole time they were doing it. But it was more of a watching. I didn't feel a thing, and just it was more of a dream that was happening or something.
Wow.
You know, with the stuff they give you to go get you through that.
Right.
And it was like watching the movie Avatar. And the first one was like watching a laser show. So it's kind of yeah.
Wow.
But
wow.
Anyway, so yeah, that was, and since then I'm still able to, do everything I was doing. Can't drive yet, but maybe there'll be a time coming up where I can.
Yeah. Did this affect your music at all, the vision challenges? Did that affect your music at all, or wasn't even a hiccup with that?
In a visionary standpoint, it depended on what I was playing, like on the slide instruments. The dobro and the pedal steel guitar, it affected a little bit, but mm-hmm. not too much where I can't figure out compensation, for it.
Wow. Well,
but
good.
other than that, no change at all.
Wow.
And it was.
That's cool. So you played music all the way through high school, didn't you?
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. I did. To step back a little bit, I play drums in school, in junior high and through high school, and even before that, in grade school. My first band experience was back in 1967 when the garage, that was during the garage band era, and everybody was playing rock and roll, and everybody on the block had a band, they played out in their garage, and there were four bands on my block, and the musicians that lived on that block that had the bands were drummers. We were all four drummers, And myself and my next door neighbor were the drummers that weren't working, that had a gig every once in a while, but the two drummers down on each corner were the ones that had the working bands. They're the ones that my neighbor and I went down the block to hear, because they were actively working and they really had it down. And our bands were really fun to play with. But we didn't gig all that much. And the first gig that I had, the first paid gig that I had as a drummer, I was 11 years old and playing with these teenagers. And we played at a hospital called Fitzsimmons. And it's a military hospital. We played in the psychiatric ward.
Wow.
At Fitzsimmons Hospital. For all these Vietnam vets, that came back that were, injured or whatever. And
wow.
We just had the best time. That was an eye opener for me.
Oh, 11 years old, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh yeah. I was sitting back there with a suit on because my parents, wanted me to always look nice when I perform. And
yeah.
if they didn't realize that a suit can make a drummer sweat. And I was, but, you know, that was just, I figured that's just part of the deal, and I was so glad to be able to go out there and perform. And then, and this was with my cousin, Joe Zambrano up in Montana, who is a full-time performer, songwriter, singer-songwriter, and he is the guy that probably I think, secondly to my dad, because he's the sibling that I actually grew up with. You know, he was my cousin, but, you know, he was, since I really didn't have a sibling to hang out with, he was there, and he was a musician. So we were, a lot of the first bands that I was in were with him. And long story short on that, he got a job with the Denver Post newspaper and ended up being a writer for the music columns. So he was able to turn me on to all these different acts that were around and coming up and places to go hear them. And he and I went to these places, you know, in the Denver area to hear, you know, the Dillards and to hear Pure Prairie League and anybody that was around. And, you know, that's when all the bluegrass started happening. He introduced me to the Denver Folklore Center and Harry Tuft, who is a living legend throughout the country. And he owns this music store that's been around, still going. And he had a concert hall, and Joe took me to these events, you know, in the concert hall. So he's the one who really brought me into the scene. And, wow. You know, my dad, he gave me the know-how on how to play music and how to learn it. And then Joe took that next step and brought me in as a performer and he introduced me to all these, everything that was going on in the folk and bluegrass scene back in the early 70s. So as far as back to the drums, I played them all the way through high school. And but what started that was I saw the movie Music Man, when it was out, you know, on the big screen. And the 76 trombones cadence and the other cadence, the faster cadence that was with it, just intrigued me so much. It really caught my ear and made me realize that I did have rhythm. And so my folks got me a toy drum, and I marched around the house playing that cadence from Music Man because I heard it and I picked up on it. And I guess they knew that I was going to be doing this for a living. I didn't. I never knew that until high school, you know, that I was going to do that. And I was just having fun playing it. And so the drums took me all the way up into high school, and my drum set wore out, and that's when the banjo came into play. So I thought, well, okay, I'll buy another drum set later, but I want to learn this instrument. And banjo was a catapult for everything else. It brought me into, you know,
and
definitely
why,
brought
why
me into
banjo?
Bluegrass.
Why was banjo
of,
option?
Deliverance, you know, dueling banjos. Deliverance came out. Bonnie and Clyde came out again, and I heard Foggy Mountain Breakdown, and the Beverly Hillbillies were going strong, and Hee Haw was on, and Andy Griffith. That's when I heard the Darling Family, who are the Dillards. And Doug Dillard was just, you know, a major influence along with Earl Scruggs. I mean, Earl Scruggs is where it all starts, you know, and everybody that's successful in bluegrass, any banjo player will tell you that if it wasn't for Earl, we wouldn't be doing this.
Wow.
You know, what we're doing.
Right.
And
obviously,
you know,
for you, movies and television for you.
Oh, yeah.
Movies,
yeah.
Movies,
oh, I'll tell you. Yeah.
Kept guiding your life. Wow. That's
amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And even when I saw, you know, the movie Doc, that was with, I totally forgot who was in, but Steve Martin was the banjo player in that movie.
Oh, yes. That's right.
And just the stuff, he was, he did the Segway stuff in there. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, intrigued by that. I was like, wow, this is really good. And then a couple of years later, I saw Steve Martin at a festival that he opened for all these other, you know, all these other acts. This was at Red Rocks in Denver. And he was the opening act, comedy, you know, the comedian banjo player. And his banjo playing his comedy is always great, you know, without a doubt. But his banjo playing just really grabbed my heart. It's like, Oh, wow. My. You know, it was just, I was just so into that. And at that time, I just started learning to play mandolin.
Wow.
You know, I heard Bill Monroe and, you know, Dean Webb from the Dillards and Doyle Lawson from Country Gentlemen. I mean, those guys just really brought the mandolin, you know, to my ears. And
yeah.
So I needed to learn that. And then after that, I learned dobro. And then after that, got into country music and learned pedal steel. And, you know, right after I graduated high school, well, before I graduated, I decided this is what I want to do for a living. I want to play music. And for two reasons, because number one, because I wanted to do it, it was in my heart. And I realized my folks were right. You know, my parents told me, you know, eventually you're probably going to be doing this. And they were right. And this is what I wanted to do. And I had a day job at that time that I had to give up to do it. But I also had to give it up because the only way I could keep it was with the government. The only way I could keep it is to go to college. Well, that kind of solidified that decision because there wasn't the only way, you know, got to rethink this here. There wasn't a college that offered a folk or bluegrass degree yet. I mean, there are now. There wasn't until the 80s when all that came out. But in the 70s, none of that was happening. So all there was jazz and classical, which I loved dearly. I mean, I loved every aspect of both of them. But, you know, at that time, I wasn't playing neither. And I thought, okay, now's the time. I better just make the decision now and go for the gusto. And I did. As soon as I graduated high school, the band that I was in, we went back east on a festival tour and we performed at a couple of them, but we weren't, you know, we didn't have anything booked. We just wanted to go. And we went as far as upstate New York.
Wow.
All these different bluegrass festivals. We started out at Bean Blossom, which is Bill Monroe's bluegrass festival that he's had, you know, up until the day that he died, and it's still going. You know, his son is running it, and, you know, the festival's going strong. But that's when I really got a taste, you know, of Appalachian and Catskills and, you know, all that whole section of the country where bluegrass was really, you know, really happening, you know, back there.
Right.
And I thought, wow, this is great. And then, a few years after that, a couple of years after that is when I started playing pedal steel and got into country music.
Oh.
And, and that was, again, I caught that at the right time too, because that was a couple of years before the movie Urban Cowboy came out, John Travolta.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Turned into a, you know, a country dancer and just, you know, like he did with Saturday Night Fever and everything else, that just made major impacts on the music industry, you know, for everybody, you know, different genres.
Right.
But,
Wow.
And I was playing bass in a country band at that time and decided to get a pedal steel and it kept me, you know, during those learning times, it gave me enough knowledge of it to get into a working country band. And it was great because there was just so many bands in the Denver area that were working and I was able to get my chops up a lot on it. And
So, Ernie, what moved you into Western? When did you first really, was that a movie?
let me think about that. No, actually, I went to the Flying W Ranch in Colorado Springs.
Oh, yeah, excellent.
Like 80, I want to say 82. Actually, I played there. Oh, this is kind of funny, too, because four of us got hired to do this gig, four banjo players. Got hired to do this, what we call a bus gig. And what it was a convention. You know, they had five buses. So it's five banjo players who played other instruments. We each got on a bus over at the Marriott Hotel, you know, in Denver, and played banjo tunes on this bus going down to the Flying W Ranch in Colorado Springs.
Oh, my goodness.
And, but we also had to play, you know, had to entertain them. So we all took another instrument because, you know, when you play, what I've learned in bluegrass, when you learn one instrument, you learn others. So we designated who was going to, well, once we got to Colorado Springs, who's going to be the mandolin player. You know, one of us did that. One of us played guitar. One of us played bass. One of us played fiddle. So we had, you know, amongst five bluegrass banjo players, we all had the makings of a bluegrass band when we got down there to, you know, to entertain these folks. And we did. We did one set of traditional bluegrass and then got back on the buses after everything was done and played again on the way, played our banjos again on the way home. And did, you know, did sing-alongs. But at the same time, I got to hear the Flying W Wranglers do this tremendous Western music. And I've, you know, I've always loved it anyway. And because my dad, you know, used to sing cowboy songs. And, you know, back, you know, when he was showing me. And so I knew about it. I knew about it. I wasn't, I was interested, but I guess I wasn't interested in as much into playing it yet. But, you know, I figured maybe sometime I'll do that. Well, it's, that's what it took, is that trip to the Flying W to do that. And I was just so enamored with the whole concept of Western music. You know, even the chuck wagon part of it, you know, these guys served the chow and did everything, you know, and the show was the last thing they did, and they did a wonderful show. And then they did a dance segment of their show, you know, of country music. And I thought, wow, this is so cool. And the harmonies are just, you know, tremendous. And the material is, you know, and I was just starting to learn about, you know, more about Roy and Gene and Rex and everybody, you know, at that time. So I was really getting my feet wet. Well, I got them. I really stepped deep into the wonderful puddle that it provided, you know, and after that I started buying recordings, you know, of these people. And then really got in. And then a few years later, I got a call to, join the Lazy H Chuck Wagon, in, Heritage Square in Golden. And that was in, 89 when I got that call. But I knew, a lot of the Wranglers, you know, from different, chuck wagons before that. So I started going out to some of these different ones and listening to people. And then I got the call in 80, no, I guess it was 90 when I got the call to replace, you know, one of the members of the Lazy H, Wranglers at that time. Well, they were called Everywhere West at that time. Rick Martinez was the, was spearheading that. And, you know, he's down in the Phoenix area and doing good. His kids are doing good in music and all that. But and Rick used to be with them, with Flying W. In fact, he was there when I heard him back in 82, whenever it was. And so he gave me the call and has heard about me, you know, through different, you know, different people, and one of them being a Wrangler himself, and he's the guy that I replaced. Dennis Bailey is his name. And so I joined the Wranglers and, you know, got into the show aspect of things. And because they had it, you know, that they had it already, you know, pre-scripted. And and I learned so much from that, and I just enjoyed it. And I enjoyed the part of serving chow and you know, just interacting with the people. And I thought, yeah, this is my home. I love this, you know,
and just been
so attached to it, you know, ever since. And I said, boy, if I could just play bluegrass and play Western music the rest of my life, I'll be very
happy,
you know,
cowboy.
Very, very, very. I'll be a happy cowboy. Yeah. And a happy camper too, because a lot of the festivals, you do that.
You camp, this is true. You get to camp. Well, I love your version of Streets of Laredo. It's an instrumental version that's gorgeous. And
thank you.
So glad you did this. And I'm so eager for our listeners to hear this. So let's listen to Ernie's version of Streets of Laredo.
Thank you.
Wow, that's just beautiful, Ernie. Just
thank you.
Beautiful. Oh, so pretty.
Yeah, it, thank you so much. It, that was another really fun song to, you know, to put together, and I had the help of Johnny Neal on the fiddles.
Oh, I was wondering who's playing fiddle. Our good buddy, yeah. Johnny Neal. What a wonderful guy he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was also in the Lazy H, bunch, in the Lazy H Wranglers.
Oh, was he?
Towards the end of that, yeah, before that chuck wagon folded, but he was in there, and we had a good, really good time, doing that. And then I had Sandy Ray on bass, bow bass, and just a regular plucked bass as well. And she is one of the co-founders of the Pikes Peak Cowboy Gathering that just happened, started last Thursday down in Colorado Springs.
Cool.
And, and she and I actually wrote the song One Lonely Rider, that's on my Where I Make My Home CD. Yeah.
Yeah,
and,
we'll talk more about that in just a minute, because I think we're going to close with that with your segment. But, I know you play all over the place with all kinds of people, and not just Western and bluegrass, but you play other things as well. But, as if that's not enough, you also teach and you produce. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Yeah, I teach music over at Swallow Hill Music Association, which is here in Denver, and it's the second largest school of that concept in the country. The largest one is Old Town Music in Chicago. And Swallow Hill actually came out of the Denver Folklore Center, Harry Tuft, his place. And it just grew and grew and grew and grew into this wonderful, mecca that's happening, and we have over 60 teachers.
Wow.
Over there. And I've been in it since the beginning. Back in 1979 is when that started.
Wow.
And and I took a little hiatus, during that time, but I have never lost touch with them. And I teach banjo and mandolin. I was actually hired first off to be a, a banjo teacher over there, and then it just kind of went from there to mandolin and guitar, bluegrass, and different genres of guitar and bass and pedal steel and just whatever I could get over there. But now I'm teaching mainly banjo and dobro and guitar and bluegrass singing.
Oh.
And my singing class, yeah, we have classes there too, is besides doing, privates one-on-one. And I've been teaching that's been the class that's been going on the most, is my bluegrass singing and harmony. And this fall, I'm about to start teaching a cowboy class, singing class.
Oh, great.
Western music, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yay!
Yeah.
I'd love to hear that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I'm going to do that, share my knowledge of that. And that'll include the harmony, and it will kind of just very lightly go into some of the yodeling part, and because Liz Masterson also, teaches at Swallow Hill. And she is definitely, she's the yodeler. And,
yes, she
and
is.
A very good one.
Yes,
oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, but I'll just kind of touch on that a little bit. But,
tell me that you're producing. That's fairly new development for you, isn't it?
No, I've been, well, yes. My first record I produced in back in 1993. It was a country band that I was in the Denver area, and that was very fun to do that. And I produced that with a very well-known engineer, pedal steel player named John Macy, at his studio, and we produced that record. We co-produced that, and then I started producing other sessions afterwards, and including I produced Born to the Saddle for Liz Masterson and Sean Blackburn.
Wow.
Yes. And that was up for an award at WMA.
Was.
Yes, for Album of the Year.
It
and
was.
But I was, you know, I'm really tickled that it got that far, you know.
Yes.
You know, made me feel good on that, you know. But and then been producing, you know, other records, different genres, you know, after that. And I have 3 projects going right now at the studio, really enjoying that.
Well, you know what? We've been talking a lot about your music. I mean, you've got it. So what do you do when you're not playing music, Ernie?
I'm usually riding my bicycle all over as much as I can. I try to, you know, stay in shape as much as I can and playing golf whenever I could.
Mm.
It just feels good to get out there and chase the ball, and that's exactly what I do, is chase that ball, you know, like the rest of us, you know, and it just feels good. It feels so good being out in the elements and hitting it, and I just have a great time, you know, with some golfing buddies, I do that, and I also see my grandkids whenever I can.
Oh, wow.
You know, and do things with them, and.
So you have your children are girls, boys? What do you have?
Yeah, I have 2 girls, and they're grown up. They're 25 and 22. And my 25-year-old, her name is Rhiannon, and she is just enjoying life, you know, just being she's not married, and she works for a mortgage company and doing really good with that. And just enjoying life, you know, her and her friends, they just go out and enjoy, you know, whatever they can. And she is a hiker, you know, does 14ers and, you know, things like that.
Wow.
And then my youngest, Cassie, she has 2 wonderful children of her own. And she's also a surgical technician.
Wow.
At Porter Hospital here in Denver. Her dream was always to be, you know, in the nursing field or medical field as, you know, as a nurse. But I think she even went past that, and she may end up being a doctor at some point. And she's doing really wonderful and raising 2 beautiful, beautiful kids. My grandson Landon, who is 6 years old, and he could write an encyclopedia if he wanted to. He's pretty smart, you know, and just graduated kindergarten, and he loves to tell about that. And then my granddaughter Lyric, who is just like, you know, just a wonderful little girl, and her name fits her because she's just a Lyric, you know. She's probably going to be a poet at some point. So.
Oh my gosh.
Any
of your children or grandchildren have the music bug?
You know, I see little elements, you know, come out. Both my daughters, my oldest one, Rhiannon, she plays guitar, and Cassie does too. But Rhiannon plays a little bit more than she. But they didn't have the the dedication for it, you know, like I did. And I never pushed them. I just said, you know, my instruments are always there for you if you want to play them. I will gladly help you and you know, help you learn to enjoy what, you know, the music field is all about, and but I won't make you do it.
Right.
And they, you know, they liked that. They, you know, they didn't want to be pushed into that at all. And and I told them I wasn't going to do that. I will just,
well, no, but nobody,
like I say,
pushed
you can play them.
Yeah.
No, nobody pushed me. You know, I was, you know, they guided me, but nobody pushed me in any direction.
The drive was yours.
So it's just really been wonderful. And the grandkids, they, I think Landon wants to be a drummer. You know, he's always, banging his hand on a table or something like that. But he does it in time. Yeah.
Good.
And Lyric, I think, is going to do strings. You know, she's very interested in that. And I think she wants to do drums as well. But more, you know, more of the stringed
instruments.
You know, instruments. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you wrote a wonderful song, and it had to have been dedicated to your girls, called Father's Wish. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah. My co-writer, Ann Byrne, you know, who helped me write Blue Range and Where I Make My Home, you know, title cut of my first CD. she came up with an idea that, you know, she asked me if have I ever thought about writing about my kids. And I said, well, I thought about it, but never really came, you know, come up with a concept. So she and I came up with, you know, with a concept of how to, you know, put that together. And one thing led to another. The song just really evolved itself. You know, it, you know, about how they, you know, start out, you know, when they start out as toddlers, and then when they get ready to make decisions about, you know, partners in life, and, you know, have to make the right decision, and, you know, in there, and just their whole upbringing, and, you know, growing up and care for, and, you know, and if they ever have to flee, you know, flee the house, as it were, you know, move out, and, you know, that just, it's basically about being grounded.
About being grounded.
Really amounts to.
Stop being
yeah,
grounded.
Being, you know, have, yes.
Have your roots down.
Well, I mean, I mean, not that kind of grounded, but just have, you know, just grounded in a very good way.
Okay.
Not from doing something bad, but, you know, just a good upbringing and wise in their decisions. And
okay.
Yeah, that's, I guess I had to be a little more specific on the grounding thing, but
yes.
No, and, but I never grounded my children, just to let you know. I never did that because my folks never did that to me. So,
well, let's listen to your father's wish.
Okay.
To my daughters dear to me, a father's wish for you. Keep your dreams alive and near, to your heart please stay true. Boys are knocking at our door, love's a mystery you'll explore. Hang on to the one for you, to your heart please stay true. Love will come and love will go, take a chance but be real slow. Right or wrong, whatever you do, to your heart, please stay true. To my daughters dear to me, a father's wish for you. Keep your dreams alive and near, to your heart, please stay true. Take your step, the road of life will guide you through, to your heart please stay true. To my daughters dear to me, a father's wish for you. Keep your dreams alive and near, to your heart please stay true. To my daughters dear to me, a father's wish for you. Keep your dreams alive and near, to your heart please stay true. To your heart, please stay true.
Ooh. Oh, that's such a sweet song. I can't believe our hour is done. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow.
So fast, honey.
Mm.
We've just
oh.
had so much fun talking with you. Well, real quickly,
oh,
tell us
what's
new on. What's new on the horizon for Ernie Martinez?
Oh, okay. Well, what's new is I have a songwriting partner, my friend Mary Gifford, who's a wonderful songwriter and singer, and we have a duo called Junction 512, and we're going to be showcasing at WMA coming up, you know, this year.
Oh, great! Excellent.
And you might have met her last year over there. I brought her up to, you know, on my set, you know, to sing a couple
right.
of tunes that we've written. But so that's kind of new. We're putting a CD together right now, and hopefully it'll be out by then. And really excited about that. And I'm in a country band right now called Dustin Divine and the Real Deal, and I'm playing drums in this group.
So
after 35 years of quitting drums, 8 years ago, I decided to go back into it because I needed a health club, in other words, a workout. So
yes.
I thought I'm either going to buy a Nautilus machine or a drum kit. What's going to end up in the closet? So
yes.
I bought the drum kit and just been really excited about that. And I'm in a band now where I can do it. And we're doing classic country. You know, the everything Merle and George and Webb Pierce and Waylon Jennings, all that good stuff, and it's all contrived with a bunch of bluegrassers. So we're getting ready to go over to Rockmon Shirt Company today, play our acoustic side, our bluegrass side of the group, for the folks over there. Look for Dustin Divine and the Real Deal, because we'll be coming your way.
Well, people that want to keep track of what's going on with you, Ernie, get in touch with you to get hold of your music or to book you to come perform, how do they do that?
They can get a hold of me at Muville, that's M as in Mike, Muville, M-U-V-I-L-L-E at MSN.com. And as far as music, CD Baby has... Where I Make My Home, my first CD, and they will have Blue Range in there as well. And then my new one when it comes out too. I'm working on an instrumental CD, by the way.
Oh, great.
And
fabulous.
So hopefully that'll be out at some point. And and acousticbylines.com is a community website that I belong to.
Okay.
They can find out where I'm performing and who I'm performing with.
Great.
You know, through there.
Your musical byline.com. Great.
Yeah.
Well,
mm-hmm.
It's just been a pleasure having you on the show, Ernie. Thank you so much.
Oh, Belinda, thank you so much. Thank you very much to you and Gary, and you're doing a wonderful show here. And I know the good Lord will just keep things going in a positive direction for all of us with this. And, I just feel very honored and blessed to be able to do this with you guys. So
thank you so much,
so,
Ernie.
Thank you.
And
mm-hmm.
So tell us, we're going to close with this segment with Lonely Rider. Tell us a little bit about that song before we play it.
Oh, okay. One Lonely Rider, Sandy Ray and I wrote this tune, and we've had it recorded by, some different people, and Yampa Valley Boys being, one of them. And they did a wonderful job on it. And, we just came up with the story, and Sandy is a wonderful poet, and she knows how to put the lyrics together, and just a wonderful songwriter as well. And we hired Bill Barwick and John Chandler and our friend Bob Turner, who is a legendary folk singer, here in the Denver area, to do the harmony stack. I'm probably the first man that ever had a low harmony stack on, on a record.
Yes.
I mean, these guys, these guys really had it. And Bob Turner did the recitation in the song. And, it was really fun having, having the three of them on. And, it turned out to be a really cool song for us. So, we've been getting a lot of really good, very positive feedback.
Excellent. Well, I can see why it's a wonderful song. And so thank you again for being with us.
Thank you.
And we're going to close out this segment with a Lonely Rider.
Okay. Thank you very much.
A hot wind blew across the prairie. A whiff of smoke in the air. Cattle were restless and wary. The night riders better take care. We lost little Joe and three ponies down a dry wash early that day. When a wall of water came sudden and swept Big Ed's best pal away. The campfire was glowing. Cattle were alone. I was weary
right down to my soul. One lonely rider watched our campfire go down to its last burning coal. Go down to its last burning coal. Big Ed pulled duty as Nighthawk. I offered to stand watch instead. He said that the horses would keep him from thinking about Joe being dead. I bedded down away from the other. My buckskin was grazing nearby. Listen to him softly breathing as I watched the firelight die. The campfire was glowing, the cattle were lowing. I was weary right down to my soul. One lonely rider watched our campfire go down to its last burning coal. Go down to its last burning coal.
Well, I woke to a shout in the darkness. You know, the cattle, they were starting to run. And the top hands all scrambled for horses. All of them bolted but one. So I jumped to the back of my buckskin. You know, there's one thing that I've learned, and that's if I could catch up to the leaders, then somehow the herd could be turned. Well, a lone rider came out of nowhere, his catch rope stiff in his hand. An angel sent down from heaven. He turned that whole demon band. Well, slowly they circled each other and stopped and then stood deathly still. And I couldn't find sign of that rider. I reckon that I never will.
The campfire's glowing, the cattle are lowing. I'm weary right down to my soul. One lonely rider watched our campfire go down to its last burning coal. One lonely rider watched our campfire go down to its last burning coal. Go down to its last burning coal.
Oh my, Ernie's life is not only a testament to hard work and a commitment to his art, but an equally strong commitment to use his gifts to uplift and help others. And God's word is filled with scriptures about giving of oneself and of the talents and assets that we've been blessed with to help and uplift others. Several of my favorite scriptures around that are Hebrews 13:16, do not neglect to do good and to share what you have, for such sacrifices are pleasing to God. Philippians 2:4, let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. And Proverbs 3:27, do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to do it. And in 1 John 3:17, but if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him? In Romans 15:1, we who are strong have an obligation to bear with the failings of the weak and not to please ourselves. Our Lord is a wonderfully giving God, and when we give ourselves of ourselves or our treasure, he promises us in Luke 6:38 that he will give back to us. And it says, give and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And for me, true faith in the Lord is not a noun. It's like love. It is a verb. It requires action. In James 2:14 through 17, the Lord tells us, "What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him? If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, be warmed and filled,' without giving them the things they need for the body, what good is that? So also faith by itself, if it does not have works, it is dead." And the Lord shaped and formed us and endowed us with all that we are. He knows what makes us tick and what we truly need. And giving feeds our souls much more than receiving. In Acts 20:35, it says, "In all things I have shown you that by working hard in this way, we must help the weak and remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he himself said, 'It is more blessed to give than to receive.'" And the bottom line is, in all of this, in all of life, we were created to worship and glorify our precious Lord, and for our very lives to be a testament to his goodness. This is expressed perfectly by our Lord Jesus in Matthew 5:16, where he tells us, "In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven." So what do you say? How about we go out today and let our light shine? Well, that's our show for today. I am so delighted y'all could join us. Thank you for giving us the gift of your time. Thank you again to our very special guest, the incomparable Ernie Martinez, for sharing a bit of himself with us today. And, of course, a huge thank you always to my amazing producer, Gary Holt, for all he does behind the scenes to make this show happen. And please remember, all the fabulous shows on Equestrian Legacy Radio are archived for you to listen to at your convenience. So you can even download our nifty mobile app and take us on the go with you. If you like our shows, please help us spread the word by telling your friends and liking us on Facebook. Thank you again for joining us today. Until next week, may all your trails be blessed.
Sweet to trust in Jesus, just to take him at his word, just to rest upon his promise, just to know, thus saith the Lord. Jesus, Jesus, how I trust him, how I've proved him o'er and o'er. Jesus, Jesus, precious Jesus, oh, for grace to trust him more. Yes, 'tis sweet to trust in Jesus, just from sin and self to see, just from Jesus simply taking life and rest and joy and peace. Jesus, Jesus, how I trust him, how Jesus, precious Jesus, oh, for grace to trust him more. I'm so glad save your friend. And I know that thou art with me and with